You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And today, we are going to talk about an episode that kind of has a mixed past. You know, like, some people like it, some people hate it. We're going to be talking about what we would have done differently. There's a lot of... I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that are right, there's a lot of things that are wrong. And the episode is Season 3, Episode 18, Darkling. And for those of you who don't remember what episode that is, that's The Doctor Alters His Personality Subroutines While Kes Contemplates Leaving Voyager for a Man.
I love how that's so specified. For a man.
For a man.
A traveling male.
Yeah.
Yes.
But before we get into that, I want to talk about a little news, and this is probably about a week old, and we would have talked about this last week, but we were on vacation in the Delta Flyer, but we're back now, and that is, some of you may have heard about a thing called an Oculus Rift. It's a headset that kind of gives you a sense of virtual reality. What was first notably designed was Seinfeld's apartment, where you could walk around and turn your head and look at... You know, his apartment, it's not like real virtual reality. It wasn't like a hologram or anything like that, but it gives the illusion of depth by putting on this headset, and it has two screens, one in front of each eye. You have like a little controller and you can move your head. And out of everything that an independent developer could have made, they made the bridge of the Voyager.
Yeah. And this is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, considering, you know, a lot of people think that Voyager is the kind of the bastard stepchild of Star Trek. You know, it's not everybody likes it. I mean, whenever somebody wants to make a Star Trek joke, it's, you know, Voyager is kind of the butt of it. And obviously, Char and I never really understood that.
Not entirely, no.
Not entirely, but it was you should check out the video. Just type in Voyager and Oculus, and or even just type in Voyager, and it'll probably pop up in the news because that's what's up. And even though it's been almost 20 years since Voyager started, it makes me happy to think that in the future, when we have holograms or have some sort of relatable technology to holograms, we're still going to make Star Trek stuff that's 30 or 50 or 60 or 100 years old, there are still going to be nerds who are like, you know what would be cool for this? The Bridge of the Voyager.
Heck yeah, and why not? I love that thought, by the way. Yes, 20 years, almost. Next year, it'll be 20 years since Voyager began. I can't believe that, first off.
Yeah.
And this virtual reality video, if you watch it on YouTube, it looks just as crisp and awesome as it always has. But then you've got that added experience, you know, of what it would be like to have this virtual reality machine on you and see it with your quote-unquote real eyes. And I can just imagine when we have holodecks, this is exactly what we're going to keep doing. Yes, this is it, guys. This is what we're doing. I love it. Yes.
We're podcasting right now because we love Star Trek and we love Star Trek Voyager. And it's just when we're 80 and they have this technology, you and I are going to be the first ones to go, let's go sit in that captain's chair, or let's go have some coffee in the ready room.
Yeah, we're going to go to Captain Janeway's ready room and have some coffee with her for the morning briefing.
And it's just so funny because the two most famous things that have been made yet. Now, granted, the technology is really, really early on, so we're going to get a flood of this kind of stuff in the future. But it was Seinfeld and Voyager. I mean, these are old shows. These are 90s shows. And it just goes to show that the people who are developing this stuff today, this is what they grew up on. and it's never going to go away. It's not like they developed, you know, Hannibal Lecter's office from the NBC show. No, they did mm-hmm. something that they're absolutely in love with that they grew up on. And what's really cool is that when I was watching that video, it still looks like it's in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's, you know what I mean? You know, like there are certain times when you watch the original series, you're like, okay, this is our idea of the future back in the 60s. Now, I'm sure that in a couple of decades, you know, Voyager will be that way, but it's been two and it still looks like a plausible future to me.
It's certainly the bridge looks like it's still futuristic. It has not dated itself in the way, certainly, that the original series bridge has. And I would dare even say the Enterprise D. Sorry, Earl Grey. Sorry, guys. I love you. But that layout is starting to show its age a little bit, whereas Voyager, I feel, is holding up very nicely. Yeah. And it will be interesting to reflect on this 50 years from now and say either yay or nay to the same question.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think the color scheme helps a lot, because that's definitely the way that we're going. You know, like mm-hmm. in our technology is, I mean, you know, granted, when you have Apple stuff, they throw in some lighter shades at you and they try to splash some color, but it always boils down to the black with the silver lining and the color display. And that's very much Voyager setup, especially when they go into, you know, red alert.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And, you know, you look at the Next Generation. I love the Enterprise D bridge. Don't get me wrong. I love it.
Me too. Me too.
The color scheme, the chairs, it's all very, you know, late 80s, early 90s, you know? It's just...
It is. It's looking a little bit like that. It's, yeah. And the thing is I did not think about it at all when the show was on. I thought it looked very futuristic. I mean, the wooden arch, that was just beautiful. And, yeah, it's not like it's bad at all. It's just the color palette not holding up to time, as Voyager, I think, is and will be.
I feel like, I don't know, maybe because we're biased, but I feel like Voyager will hold the test of time, and I feel like there might be a little bit of a revival later on, kind of like what was going on with Enterprise just a couple years ago. I felt like there was a little bit of a resurgence where people heard it was bad, and so they didn't watch it when it was on TV, and now that Netflix made them available, you can watch them on Hulu, they just came out with the Blu-rays, people are like, hey, this show isn't as bad as everyone said. You know,
absolutely.
Like, this actually has some pretty good storylines, yeah.
Yeah, well, I feel all of Trek has kind of had this revival, in part thanks to the Abramsverse movies, but I think in just as much a part due to things like Netflix, where people are, they're either rediscovering these shows all over again, or they're discovering them for the first time. And they're going through the whole catalog and they think, oh, wow, I didn't know this was here for 20 plus years. It's been here all along.
And what's really great is that, you know, like when I was watching Darkling, I watched it over again just to refresh my memory. There's a few things that are very, you know, there's a few things in there that are pretty cheesy. You know, like some of the effects aren't as good as what they could have been today.
Sure.
You know, some of the shot selections, you know, the matte painting, you know, things like that, you know, like not necessarily matte paintings, but you know what I mean. There are things like that that date itself, but Farscape has been in the news recently because they're trying to get a movie to come out. And that was released in 1999, and Voyager was released even before that. And the thing is, now granted, you know, Farscape didn't have the budget that Voyager did, but I just watched a little bit of an episode, and I was like, this is Sunday afternoon sci-fi. You know what I mean? It's
I do. It's kind of like on par with things like Babylon 5, where even though, yes, the CGI wasn't in its infancy, and they did the best that they could, it's still just too obvious where, I don't know. Yes, Star Trek Voyager does date itself a little bit, but I feel like it's not quite down on that level. They did try to raise the bar just a little bit. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
No, it does make sense. And like we talked about, maybe, you know, maybe Babylon 5, maybe Farscape, or, you know, like shows like Hercules and Xena, what I'm calling mm-hmm. Sunday afternoon sci-fi, or fantasy, or whatever you want to call it. Now, granted, Voyager, because of the contracts that they had, they were given a larger budget, so they had time and the resources to do what these other shows couldn't. But the point I'm trying to make is that because of that, it'll stand the test of time longer. You know, like when I put on an episode of Farscape, I'm like, oh dear God, Like this is wow. This is like in the first minute, I could see how it's dating itself. But with Voyager and Next Gen and Deep Space Nine, decades from now, we'll be like, okay, this is cool.
Right. It also helps that we have the Blu-rays coming out now, too, where there has been revival of some of those less-than-par special effects, especially for early TNG, when they simply just didn't have the resources to make really cool stuff happen that's easy now with computers. Mm-hmm. And they're making it look so beautiful. They're giving it the nice homage. They're not changing it completely, the effects, but they're sprucing them up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like about it. There are certain times when I was like, okay, just enhance what was done, like clean up the phaser beam, you know, like because it blurred that week, but it looked okay next week. Make it look like next week, you know. I like have some consistency, and that's what I didn't like so much about the TOS Blu-ray remasters, because they just completely changed stuff. You know, they just made it look completely different from what it originally did.
Right.
And with Next Gen, they're really trying to make it look how it did in the original, but just, you know, just format it for the high definition format, and also just kind of let it live a little bit longer in the, you know, in the digital world. And so I appreciate that, and I kind of wish they did that a little bit more with TOS.
Yeah, although I do have to say it's kind of cool to go back. You can watch the non-redone version as well as the redone version and compare the two if you want to on the DVD set. So there is that element that makes it kind of fun.
Yes.
But at the same time, yes, I wish they would have taken the same methodology as they did for TNG and applied it to TOS. I know there were some really angry fans who were vocal about the TOS digitization of the special effects, if you will, when they came out. Some people were very unhappy about that. I don't know. I'm neither here nor there on it. I wasn't outraged. I wasn't just kind of, just, okay, well, this is interesting. Some of it looks really nice, but I do like to go back and see the original thing, too. I don't know. Maybe it's just nostalgia.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like, I wasn't up in arms. I was just kind of like, hey, this is cool. Doesn't look as good as what you're promising, but this looks pretty cool. And it always makes me wonder how the Voyager Blu-rays, if they happen, how those are going to look. Yeah. Oh, they will. One thing that I hope that they don't mess with is the really intense special effect that probably took endless hours of CGI and man hours to convert the Doctor into the evil Doctor by ruffling up his hair a little bit.
Endless. Just thousands and thousands of hours, millions of dollars for that, what, 3 seconds?
That
was dedication right
it's
there.
It's absolutely amazing because, okay, in The Darkling, it's basically a Jekyll and Hyde story.
Yeah.
And when the Doctor is evil Doctor, they give him some contacts. Some colored contacts, and then they rough up his hair. That's it. And it's hysterical.
Well, and then he's got, like, the very ultimate grumpy cat expression on his face. This exaggerated frown.
Yeah.
So you know it's him. Yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about what is good about Darkling. Because as you mentioned when we started this thing off, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
So what did you like about this episode? Were there things that you did like about it, first off? I mean, do you hate it all? I don't even know what you think about this one.
Well, no, I don't hate it all. I remember watching it live and just going, okay, you know, that happened. You know, like, I didn't hate it. I didn't even dislike it. I was just like, all right, that episode happened. It was a throwaway, you know?
Uh-huh.
What I liked was the idea that the Doctor screwed around with his program and it went wrong, because you knew that was going to happen. It was a natural conclusion of him growing as a person. He was constantly messing with his program. He wanted more freedom. He wanted more personality. This is a guy who later on we're going to find out loves to go golfing, who loves to sing opera, who loves to, you know, be a photographer and everything like that. He's constantly growing, getting more hobbies, and so his personality is becoming more and more complex. And if I had the ability to change certain things about myself, I mean literally, not like, okay, go to a seminar and learn how to love myself. No, I'm talking about literal physical change where I could type in a button and I'm like, hey, I'm more romantic, or like, I'm more charming,
right,
or I'm less of a jerk, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah. In a sense, that's exactly what the Doctor is doing. He's finding the traits from all of these great historical figures that he admires and appreciates, taking the best of them and putting them within himself and not realizing, oh, you know, the good also has some bad with it. There's going to be consequences. Mm-hmm. I love that scene where B'Elanna tells him, look, you're probably going a little too far with this. This is going to end badly, basically, mm-hmm. because it's just kind of, we don't know what's going to happen, essentially. I don't think a hologram has been messed with nearly as much as the Doctor has messed with his subroutines and wanting to develop a personality. But like you said, mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense that he's doing this. I found it interesting that they went with the darker angle just because Bob Picardo does comedy so well.
So well. Although I have to admit, okay, speaking of which, you know, things we liked and doing comedy so well, that scene where he comes on to B'Elanna is
so
hysterical.
Creepy.
You know, like, it's creepy. Like, okay, the thing that makes it comedy is that you realize that the Doctor has to have just done something wrong. Now, if this mm-hmm. was a real scenario where a doctor was coming on to a patient, no, that's not funny. You know, that's...
No.
That's actually... That's entirely evil. But with the Star Trek lens and Bob Picardo, you know, playing it how he did, he's like, have you been naughty?
You know he had fun saying that line over and over and over. I don't know how many times they probably did takes of that scene just so he could do it. He probably just loved the heck out of it.
It's just so great. And also when he ends up with his hand on her thigh and the camera tilts down, you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, like, oh, dude, no, you have crossed the line. I love her follow-up, though, that she'll kick him into the next millennium if he doesn't remove his hand. Yeah, that is probably one of, like, that's like the gem of this episode, right there, that scene. The Doctor and B'Elanna are really great in this episode. I like that very much. What did you think about the whole B-plot with Kes making out with this alien dude, the man that she's contemplating leaving the ship for? What did you think about that?
I liked the idea of it. I felt like Jennifer Lean was a little awkward in this episode, and not in a good way, not in a I'm trying to find myself way. Jennifer Lean, I feel, kind of phoned this episode in, where, and she doesn't normally do that, and she was also overly breathy. Did you notice that? Like, I'm sorry to nitpick.
I didn't.
But she was just like, I've been on Voyager 3 years now, and... I feel like I have to ask myself this question, Doctor. You know, it's just like, it felt like she was trying really hard to be the Kes character, and she doesn't have to try because she just normally just slips right into it. But I don't know.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to go back now and listen for this because it sounds like when you were doing the impression of it, like she's training for a new life as a sex phone hotline operator or
it
something.
It was like a 1-900. You know, it was like a 1-900 Kes kind of thing. But it's, I don't know. It's just, I like the idea. I like the idea of Kes falling for an alien because we never had that before because she's always been with Neelix. And so
right.
I would have liked to see her explore that more once she broke up with Neelix. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more development. I don't know. But we can get into that when we talk about what we would change.
Okay. Well, I kind of have to say that I totally dislike the B-plot with Kes because I don't feel like it's phoned in. I actually feel that it's out of character, period, for Kes.
Okay.
And I like the idea of it. I really do. I think this was necessary, and I think it's a logical step. Again, after breaking up with Neelix, of course she's going to be interested in other people. That's called growth. That's great. But the way they went about it sucked. I mean, I felt like Kes was really just turning into this irresponsible teenage girl. You know, she is all, hee-hee-hee, I'm going to go sneak off and make out with my boy. And, you know, she's doing an all-nighter to get reports done that she normally would be entirely responsible and get in with plenty of time to spare, not really just doing this weird, crazy stuff. Like, Kes is much more of a cautious, thoughtful person than she is in this episode. I think mm-hmm. she would be contemplating a lot more this situation than what she did. And that's actually what I wish the conversation with her and Janeway would have been much more. I wish we would have just had this toned down a little, I think, where she's getting to know this guy and she realizes, hey, I kind of like him, but she's cautious. because this is very new to her. She's not had romance outside of Neelix, so this is a little scary, it's a little exciting. And I would have loved to have seen her go a little more to Janeway on advice for, you know, okay, yeah, this, my life is changing a lot, it's confusing, it's fantastic. You know, have you ever been at a crossroads where you feel like you can make one decision or another and completely change your whole life? And then you could go into some Janeway backstory. She could tell Kes a story about something that happened in her life, you know? Character development, weird. It'd be great. But I just thought, great idea in theory, bad execution.
So overall, like, what, how would you tackle this episode?
Okay, what I want to do with this episode. There was some stuff that I just really did not care about at all. And one of those things was Kes's love interest. And these people, these travelers on the planet, don't care at all about him. I might even just chuck him entirely. What I did like was the idea of the Doctor playing around with his personalities. Mm-hmm. And even though this is not a Novell idea at all, Bob Picardo knows how to choose scenery like no one else, and he can make anything happen. You just give it to him, and he'll make the most of whatever you give him. Now, like I said earlier, I think comedy would have been the better way to go with this. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm not much of a scary film or horror kind of film person. Stuff just doesn't really appeal to me, and it's not like this is even very scary. It just sort of feels like they're trying to do, I don't know, shock jock type of stuff for the sake of, you know, ooh, demented, that's crazy. So you're going to have weird special effects and you're going to have Bob Picardo screaming at everybody. Okay, fine. No, I would have loved to have seen something a little more, maybe starting out direct where he is like literally trying on new personalities. So maybe he's painting with Janeway in the Da Vinci program and he's getting into his artsy side a little bit and he's trying to mimic Da Vinci or something. Or maybe he is Da Vinci with Janeway, and she's critiquing him on, well, okay, you got this down, but what are you doing here, and that sort of thing. I would love to have seen him try on a couple of personalities, because Bob Picardo has the chops to be multiple people. We know this. He could do it.
I like that. That's interesting. It's kind of like when Lol was trying to choose an identity.
Yes.
You know, like trying on different hats. I mean, when you're an artificial light form, you have that opportunity. I like
right.
that idea.
Yeah, he's just kind of flipping the switch to see what happens and what he likes and what he doesn't like. And he's doing this with B'Elanna's help because it is a risk. And so they're trying to be cautious about it. But guess what? Of course it's going to go wrong anyway. And so we are going to have probably some sort of a thing where his computer or his subroutines, they are malfunctioning. Or if you want to have the dark element, fine, you could have it turn into the evil Doctor. Oh no, things are going awry, we have to fix him. I would have actually given him a little more danger, though, with this prospect, where, you know how like when Data's emotion chip fuses into his neural net and he officially can't take it back?
Yeah.
I would love for the similar thing to happen to the Doctor, where he's played with his subroutine so much that in order to fix him, they would have to do basically the factory restore on him and start from absolute scratch, just clean slate and build all over again. And of course, he's not going to want to do that because he's had 3 years of exponential growth, which makes him realize that he has changed as a person. He doesn't need to do all these flipping switches and trying on new personalities, because he already has a personality and he's developing it, and it's going to take time to become the person he wants to be, just like all of us. So there's the message and the meaning of the episode, more of a you're okay just as you are, we're all a work in progress kind of a thing. That's what I would do with it, because I feel like this episode does not have a very strong takeaway.
I could see that. I would have liked to have seen that episode where you just trash the whole Kes thing with the Traveler and focus more on the development of the Doctor changing his personality instead of it just being kind of like a switch.
You know what, though? I wouldn't trash the B-plot. I think I would have just really toned it down and kept it in character, in my opinion.
Okay, I got you. I understand.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily have her falling in love with this guy. Just make her realize, you know, there are options out there now that I have not previously considered. Mm-hmm. I could fall in love with somebody. I could eventually decide to no longer be on Voyager. Just let that sink in and have her contemplate that with Janeway. Take it a little slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I feel like we could have explored that conversation more with Janeway and mm-hmm. had a little bit more in-depth one. And
agreed.
And make the, make the Traveler a little bit, more appealing, I guess.
Yeah, like interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Worthwhile of camera time? I'm sorry, I just didn't give a darn about any of them.
And also, going back to the Doctor, they could even bring back when they had to reset his program beforehand, like before he got his mobile emitter.
Yeah.
You remember that?
They did, yes.
And so they could say, they're like, well, we could do that again. And he's like, I'm not going through that again. You know, that would be, allow him to call back his history, have some continuity and say, listen, I'm not going through that again. I'm not going to put the Voyager crew through that again. I'm going to learn to live with this stuff, and I'm going to not screw around with my program anymore.
Right. Yeah, make him realize, okay, wow, I really have changed. I don't want to start all over.
Yeah.
That would simply be too much. Like, that would almost be like a traumatic experience for him to have to do that again.
Oh, not just almost. I think that would be a horribly traumatic experience.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. Man. So, that's kind of what I would do with it. What would you do differently with this episode?
Well, I have a lot of the same feelings as you do, but I would probably keep the structure, but I'd probably steal your idea of toning down the whole Kes and the Traveler plot. They needed a catalyst in order to make the Doctor flip. Like, they needed a catalyst to have his alter ego just completely take over, and for some reason they decided that catalyst to be Kes possibly leaving Voyager and throwing herself into a harmful situation with a guy she hardly knows. And so both Tuvok and the Doctor were like, no, you're young, you're naive, we need to take care of you. And I didn't really dig on that too terribly much. What I would have liked to have seen, and this might not have been as kosher for the Star Trek audience, but I would have kept that storyline, and I would have made everything a little bit more gradual. At the beginning of the episode, the Doc does, you know, exactly what he's doing. Like, he's investigating, you know, Gandhi and T'Pau and Byron and all that. He's doing the same thing, and he's trying to integrate them. And we see him change slightly, just slightly, as we go on through the episode. Maybe he's just a little harsher to somebody than he needs to be, just very subtly, like maybe you can handle it yourself. And they're like, whoa, Doc, sorry. He's like, I'm sorry, I've just been really busy right now, you know, like everything like that. You know, like, maybe I've been activated too long.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if that works with a computer program, but, you know, something like that, where it's just like he snaps a little bit, or he neglects his duties. Like, don't have Kes neglect her duties. Have the Doc do something that's out of the ordinary for him, but more gradual. Not like this whole, okay, bam, he's coming on to Milana. he's coming on to Milana and he's grabbing her thigh. You know, like, no, that's like, bam, that's a switch. That's on and off.
Mm-hmm.
I want this for the next 42 minutes to be a slow progression where people are like, okay, we need to take a look at your program. He's like, no, it's fine. And Milana looks at his program, doesn't find anything, but that's because it's subtle changes that have interacted with his subroutines, you know, so it's become a part of him, and that's why she can't see it, you know, just technobabble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll explain it somehow.
Yeah, and then, so Kes meets this guy. He's really charming. He's mysterious, and he wants Kes. Like, he wants her. And Kes wants him back because he doesn't look like a hairy lizard.
Is that a Neelix insult?
Oh, I don't think so. I think you can take that however you want.
Okay, fine. I was just having some weird cross, like, what if Neelix had actually been the object in Threshold to go warp 10? He would have been a hairy lizard.
It would have just been a hairy version of the lizard we saw. So, okay, so anyway, this guy's super charming. And also, they're not on an outpost in the middle of nowhere on a planet. They're in a space station where people who are constantly traveling in space would make more sense to be fueling up at.
That is something that did bother me about this episode, is why is this important? Why are they here? What is the point?
There was no reason for it to be in the locale that it was. It should have been a ship or a space station or, I don't know, something man-made, something mechanical. You know, yeah. And I like the whole Traveler's Code thing. I liked that introduction at the beginning where the guy he basically puts him in his place by saying, I've traveled farther than anyone I know. I've gone in space farther than you, and thus he has more prominence in his culture to this man. I kind of liked that. I like that little peek into their culture. But have him charm Kes, have him totally come onto her, and the doc is... like, it's completely separate storylines, and the doc is getting a little bit more abrasive and going, you know, a little bit forward. And then later on, we find out that the Traveler... not the Traveler, that's...
makes me think of the TNG character every time you say that.
I know, I need to stop saying that, because I just now heard it. So this guy, he does something to either break Kes's heart, or we find out he's a womanizer, or he gets kind of, like... I don't know, maybe violently physical towards her when she says, no, I'm not going to go with you. And he just, I don't know, he's kind of turns out to be a jerk. And so Kes comes to the sick bay and just like complaining, saying like, I don't understand men. The only person I've been with was a hairy lizard. And so that's the doc's catalyst, is complete reaction. I'm going to hurt this person. Like, I'm... okay. Like, he just completely... that is when the switch happened, where it was just been a pot that's been slowly boiling, and then all of a sudden it just blows its lid. And that was the catalyst. And so that happens in the last couple of minutes. And so that's our climax, is where he goes and he attempts to hurt this person, this man formerly known as the Traveler. And...
the Traveler formerly known as the Traveler.
Right. And you know, and then that way, you know, like Kes comes in and says, no, it's fine. I'm not going to go with him. Like, he didn't hurt me. I got away because of the morals that you taught me, blah, blah, blah. And
corny heartwarming moment. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a corny heartwarming moment, and they're able to disable the doctor, reset his program. The guy doesn't die because it's Star Trek.
Of course.
The guy goes out on his own without Kes and with his tail between his legs. That's what I would have liked to have seen. More subtlety and more of a bigger catalyst at the end, instead of just, oh, Kes might leave, possibly.
Yeah. The whole idea that she was ready to jump ship just didn't seem plausible. And I felt like, no, she's not digging this guy that much. At least I did not feel like she was that into him to want to do that. Like, I know they tried to show it, but it was not working for me at all. And maybe it was the fact that I didn't like him very much. I didn't see what she saw in him. And that, no, I wasn't cool with that at all. But I kind of like your idea of making it a gradual progression for the Doctor, to the point where he reaches that breaking point, which we all have. And then he's just going to flip his lid, because I have a feeling as we were watching this episode, had we gotten to seen it, we would know something's up, but we're not really sure what or why. Mm-hmm. And then when this would to happen, you would know, okay, whoa, buddy, what happened here? What is going on?
Yeah, so I feel like both of our ideas are very, it's not, these aren't radical changes. These are...
no.
These are basic structural changes that would have been easy for the producers to make and for the writers to kind of come back and say, like, okay, we can keep this premise. We can even keep both of them, A and B, and just refine them a little bit more, take our time, but make it more subtle and focus on the right things instead of what would make a good act break before the commercial.
Right. Totally. Yeah, that's kind of how this episode in general feels to me, is it was a rush job in the middle of the season, and they just didn't take their time with it to really bring out the absolute best of what they were thinking of with this story. I think they could have done the Jekyll and Hyde story, as they did, much differently and better had they just maybe taken a little more time and care to decide how they were going to do it. I think the ideas are great. The execution, though, we've said this so many times about Voyager, they have fantastic ideas, but they don't know how to make them happen to their fullest potential. And I think this episode, prime example.
Although I do have to give credit to Michael Piller, who apparently the first draft, or one of the initial drafts of this episode, they were going to make the Doctor more psychosexual.
Yes, he was going to get all kind of perverted on Kes.
Yes, and Michael Piller believed against it so strongly that he wrote the writers and said, listen, if you do this, I'm taking my name off of the episode. And Michael Piller is Michael Piller. And for him to say that, that's when you go, oh, maybe we should listen to our boss.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to what he says because he speaks truth. And you can read about this on Memory Alpha for the Darkling episode materials. If you read about the scene they wanted to create, it would be uber creepy and a little too weird, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was a little surprised, maybe not too surprised to read that Bob Picardo liked this way of doing the whole psycho S&M doctor with guests. I feel like as an actor, you like extremes, you like exploring the dark spaces. And so,
oh, yeah, of course.
So I'm sure that as an actor, he would have liked to have done that or seen that. But as a showrunner, Michael Piller did the right thing.
Yes, the voice of reason won over.
Speaking of voices of reason, I think one voice that we definitely need to listen to and that we do listen to are those voices of our iTunes reviews.
We do have a new one, and we have Rachel in St. Louis to thank for that. As she's a dedicated listener already. She was a newer listener, but she is listening to every show from number one up.
Jeez.
That is some dedication, because we are up to 71 episodes now. This is not a small amount of time anymore. We've been doing this for a while, so thank you very much, Rachel, for your dedication, first off. And then second, for writing a review, because that warms our hearts. This is our reward for doing the show.
Absolutely.
Makes us feel good. Yes. So, you know the drill. If you have not written a review, be one of the cool kids and give us 5 stars. Let us know what you think of the show, and we will give you a shout-out, just as we did for Rachel. But crazy S&M fantasies about Kes are not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here is a little glimpse at what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Dr. McCoy with Larry Nemetschek.
But, you know, when everybody else had their Kirk shirt or their Spock shirt, like the first uniform I had my mom make me was a McCoy uniform, of course.
Earl Grey.
The 7-7 Challenge.
Did you know that Tim Russ was one of the possible choices for Commander Jordy LaForge?
But did you know he was also in Star Trek Generations?
But did you know he was also served with Captain Sulu on board the Excelsior?
I did know that, in fact.
The Orb.
Our Ben Bashir commentary.
I love Avery. Tell me what happens next.
And the look up at an angle. He's not even looking at Bashir, he's looking up at the angle. Tell me what happens next.
The Ready Room.
Spectre of the Gun.
They're so quick to jump to conclusions, like the guy gets shot in front of them and they're like, death is the only thing that's real on this planet. And like, wait a minute, how do you know that? That could just be a total figment of your imagination as well.
To the journey!
Favorite sun commentary.
Yeah, Janeway is... you better get more coffee, sweetie. It's going to be a long day. Ensign Kim is going to put you through some hell.
Warp 5.
Alternate outcomes of the Zindi crisis.
But the Enterprise is heavily damaged. We're talking... practically destroyed. Everything but a shell. Maybe the saucer section is the only thing that's still around. And 80% of the crew dies. Commentary, Trek stars.
Rick Berman and Star Trek.
He's kind of a moving target, so he found some dimensionality. He made it into a cube.
Yeah.
And so he was able to move things around in there.
A Borg cube.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Equinox.
John Savage actually came up with the premise for the story, but they needed somebody to flesh it out, to develop it. And so they sent me John's premise, and I just, well, it expanded into the script for the project that we're doing.
Melodic Treks.
The Borg in Music.
In when they released it as a Blu-ray,
they combined them.
They connected them, and there's the no feature. Delay. There's they cut off that music, and then it's just like, oh, that didn't work.
Literary Treks.
Rise of the Federation, Tower of Babel.
Saval talks about this idea that, you know, people mutually consent to abide by these rules for their collective benefit. The idea that, you know, absolute unfettered freedom is just a ridiculous idea.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week, including some very cool Voyager stuff on Continuing Mission, our new show about independent Star Trek productions. I very recently got to do an interview with Chris and Manu Interime, whom Voyager fans know as Icheb on Voyager, to talk about Star Trek Renegades. And there's a new episode with Tim Russ, also talking about Renegades. So if you haven't checked those out yet, definitely get on that. Now, we have so many shows going on Trek FM these days. It is incredible. And there is no way we would be able to produce and distribute all of this stuff without the help of our sponsor.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So next week, we are going to return to our lists. We love our lists on To the Journey. What are we going to talk about, Tristan?
What we're going to talk about next week is something that I'm really excited about, because I know that sometimes I'll criticize people who just want to watch stuff for the violence and for the action. I mean, we all think it's cool. We all think ship battles are awesome. And I always say, but the reason why we come back to Star Trek is the philosophy, is the diplomacy, is the life lessons that we learn week in and week out. But I'm going to take a break from that and just kind of look at the shiny things and say, phaser battles are cool. Because, Char, you and I are going to make our top five list of battle sequences in Voyager. Whether it's ship battles, hand-to-hand combat, doesn't matter. We're going to talk about these top five sequences that just get our blood pumping.
Yeah! We're going to dig into the adrenaline and just totally go nuts. Cut loose.
But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey! Welcome to Char's 1-900 number. What you wearing?
TTJ After Dark.